Listen, buds, it's March 21st. Don't you know enough to burst? Come on, birds, unlock your throats. Come on, gardeners, shed your coats. Come on, zephyrs, come on, flowers. Come on, grass and violet showers. And come on, lambs in frisking flocks. Salute the vernal equinox.
You're listening to the voice of Ogden Nash reading Spring Song, a page from this Sunday's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Every Sunday afternoon at this time, WRCA, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. Today, The Cadman Story, our guests, Barbara Cohen and Marion Roney. And by transcription, Dylan Thomas, Ogden Nash, Judith Anderson, Alfred Drake, and Basil Rathbone. Let me see now. C. C. A. Sicilian. Keoma. That's too far. Oh, here it is. Cadman, English poet, the first to compose religious verse in the vernacular, about 670 A.D. And in the vernacular, it's quite a stretch from the above-mentioned Cadman of yore to the Cadman of the present, best represented by this voice. Listen.
Now as I was young and easy under the apple boughs, about the lilting house, and happy as the grass was green, the night above the dingle starry. Time let me hail and climb, golden in the heydays of his eyes. And honored among wagons, I was prince of the apple towns. And once below a time, I lordly had the trees and leaves trail down the rivers of the windfall light. And as I was green and carefree, famous among the barns about the happy yard, and singing as the farm was home in the sun that is young once only, time let me play and be golden in the...
The voice is that of the great Welsh poet, the late Dylan Thomas. The poem is called Fern Hill. It appears on side one, Band 1 of the Cadman album, Selections from the Writings of Dylan Thomas, read by the poet. And thereby hangs our story today on Anthology. The principal members of the cast are Barbara Cohen and Marion Roney. Barbara, Marion, we're very happy to have you as our guests. And we're very interested in what we refer to as the Cadman story.
Do you really want me to tell you the story all over again, the same story I told you when I was on your program, when it was being broadcast only in New York, about how Barbara and I met at Hunter College and how we lived to grow out of college and or get out of college and find jobs with which we were dissatisfied, Barbara in the publishing field and I in the record business, and how we were very unhappy because our fogey old bosses didn't want to take to new ideas, and of course we were full of them, and how uncommercial we were and decided when we decided to produce poetry records, because everybody said if it's such a good idea, it must have been done before, and if it wasn't done before, it's because it really isn't a feasible idea. And how we went into it, after all, without any money to speak of, with no office, with no company, with nothing. How we stalked Dylan Thomas, and how we talked Dylan Thomas into recording for us, and how then, within a few months, we had not only Dylan, but Thomas Mann, Archibald MacLeish, Catherine Ann Porter, Sean O'Casey, Tennessee Williams, Ogden Nash. Who else? I don't know.
No, you don't have to tell us that story if you don't want to, Marion. But your mention of Dylan Thomas, of course, is very contemporary, because next week, you know, we're having with the kind permission of Cadman Records, a Dylan Thomas program, in which he's going to read his poetry, some of it in Welsh, I believe, right?
Oh, no. This is all English.
All in English?
Oh, of course. I'll have you know that Dylan was one of the finest of the English poets, and the fact that he grew up in Wales without knowing Welsh is something that merely lent color. I shouldn't have used the word merely, which lent color to his to his verse, but his language, of course, his idiom is English.
What other artists, besides these you've already mentioned, have recorded on Cadman, or did you give us the whole works?
No, there won't be the whole works for a number of years to come, I hope. We're going to be doing more authors and also actors reading the authors of the works of authors who can no longer speak for themselves. We've recorded Judith Anderson reading Edna St. Vincent Millay, as your listeners may remember, some of them. We've recorded Alfred Drake reading the Rubaiyat, and a wonderful reading it is, we think.
I understand that we're going to have a little bit of Miss Anderson now. The record contains something like 22 poems, as I recall. And I was very happy to notice that you picked what we consider the three best poems on the record, which are the three last ones. We always like to end with a big boom. They're called The Parsi Woman, What Rider Spurs Him from the Darkening East, and Now Sits the Autumn Cricket in the Grass.
Beautiful Parsi woman in your pale silk veil with the gold border, why do you watch the sky? The sky is thick and cloudy with the bold, strong wings of the vulture that shall tear your breast and thigh on the tall tower of silence where you at length must lie. Ah, but have not I too at the end of the northern May, when the pasture slope was pink with the wild azalea and fragrant with its breath, touched the brown, treacherous earth with my living hand, thrown me prone on my own green coffin lid, and smiled at the grass, and had no thought of death. You there, with a tranquil, lovely brow, what do you see so high? Some beautiful thing? The sun on the vulture's wing? What rider spurs him from the darkening east as from a forest, and with rapid pound of hooves, now light, now louder on hard ground, approaches and rides past with speed increased, dark spots and flecks of foam upon his beast? What shouts he from the saddle, turning round as he rides on? Greetings, I made the sound. Greetings from Nineveh, it seemed at least. Did someone catch the object that he flung? He held some object on his saddle bow and flung it towards us as he passed. Among the children then it fell, most likely. No, 'tis here. A little bell without a tongue. Listen. It has a faint voice, even so. Now sits the autumn cricket in the grass, and on the gravel crawls the chilly bee. Near to its close, and none too soon for me, draws the dull year, in which has come to pass the changing of the happy child I was into this quiet creature people see, stitching a seam with careful industry to deaden you who died on Michaelmas. Ages ago, the purple aconite laid its dark hoods about it on the ground, and roses budded small and were content. Swallows are south long since and out of sight. With you the flocks and asters also went. Nor can my laughter anywhere be found.
That was a beautiful reading indeed. I wish the Coast to Coast audience might have heard Judith Anderson's reading of Renaissance, which we played on Anthology some time back when you were here with us before, Marion. This was just as beautiful. It's on the same record, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
So there are about 50 minutes worth of readings on that record, going from Millay's very early works like Renaissance to the very final ones like The Cricket.
50 minutes. It must take you quite a while to get that recorded just the way you want it, doesn't it?
Yes, it's not only the way we want it, but of course the way Miss Anderson wants it. She is a superb artist, as you can hear from the reading, and she would not allow any more than we, a bad take. And so she was extremely conscientious, a wonderful person to work with, as indeed are all of the people we have worked with so far. We've been lucky.
Is that true? You know, we always imagine these great, great artists to be temperamental, but you don't find them that way at all, huh?
If they are temperamental, then I must say temperament helps.
It helps.
You know, there's something very interesting about the recording sessions we've had. I don't think we've ever had anybody, except Dylan, who was willing or wanted to listen to his own voice back. Dylan was, of course, both the poet and the actor, and he was trying to achieve something which he had to hammer out inch by inch. But Miss Anderson just refused to listen to it back. She said, if I listen to it, I won't let it be released because it won't be good enough, and so forth and so on. And our poets, most of them, are really afraid to hear themselves back.
I could imagine why perhaps some poets whose voices are not the beautiful things that, well, like Miss Anderson's, but I cannot imagine that Miss Anderson, with that marvelous voice and interpretation, should not want to hear it.
Well, poets are usually shocked at the way they sound, but of course, neither they nor we are after an actor's interpretation. We're after the real thing, the authentic reading by the author himself of the works he has written in a spirit which only he remembers.
Perhaps there's something we ought to point out to our listeners, and that's the fact that not all of your recordings are necessarily serious poetry, are they?
Oh, of course not. There's, well, Ogden Nash, who I suppose represents the lighter side of us perfectly. And I think I see an Ogden Nash record over there just about to be played. Do you think we could listen to Spring Song and Bankers Are Just Like Anybody Else Except Richer?
I don't see why not.
Listen, buds, it's March 21st. Don't you know enough to burst? Come on, birds, unlock your throats. Come on, gardeners, shed your coats. Come on, zephyrs, come on, flowers. Come on, grass and violet showers. And come on, lambs and frisking flocks. Salute the vernal equinox. Twang the cheerful lute and zither. Spring is absolutely hither. Yester eve was dark despair, with winter, winter everywhere. Today, upon the other hand, 'tis spring throughout this happy land. Oh, such is nature's chiaroscuro, according to the Weather Bureau. Then giddy up, Napoleon, giddy up, Gideon, the sun has crossed the right meridian. What though the blasts of winter sting? Officially, at least, it's spring. And be it far from our desire to make the weatherman a liar. So blossom, ye parks, with cozy benches, occupied by blushing wenches. Pipe, ye frogs, while swains are sighing, and furnaces unwept are dying. Crow, ye cocks, a little louder. Mount, ye sails of paint and powder. Croon, ye crooner, yet more croonishly. Shine, ye moon, a lot more moonishly. And, oh, ye brooklets, burst your channels. And, oh, ye camphor, greet ye flannels. And bloom, ye clothesline, bloom with wash, where erstwhile squudged the grim galosh. Ye transit lines, abet our follies by turning loose your open trolleys. And ye waking hibernators, drain antifreeze from your radiators. While ye otherwise useless dove, remember, please, to rhyme with love. Then giddy up, Napoleon, giddy up, Gideon. The sun has crossed the right meridian. What though the blasts of winter sting? Officially, at least, it's spring. This is a song to celebrate banks, because they're full of money, and you go into them, and all you hear is clinks and clanks. Or maybe a sound like the wind in the trees on the hills, which is the rustling of the $1,000 bills. Most bankers dwell in marble halls, which they get to dwell in because they encourage deposits and discourage withdrawals, and particularly because they all observe one rule which woe betides the banker who fails to heed it, which is you must never lend any money to anybody unless they don't need it. I know you, you cautious conservative banks. If people are worried about their rent, it is your duty to deny them the loan of one nickel. They are obviously cranks. Yes, if they request $50 to pay for a baby, you must look at them like Tarzan looking at an uppity ape in the jungle. And tell them what do they think a bank is anyhow. They had better go get the money from their wife's aunt or uncle. But suppose people come in and they have a million, and they want another million to pile on top of it. Why, you brim with the milk of human kindness, and you urge them to accept every drop of it. And you lend them the million, so then they have 2 million, and this gives them the idea that they would be better off with 4. So they already have 2 million as security, so you have no hesitation in lending them 2 more. And all the vice presidents nod their heads in rhythm. And the only question asked is, do the borrowers want the money sent, or do they want to take it with them? But please do not think that I am not fond of banks, because I think they deserve our appreciation and thanks. because they perform a valuable public service in eliminating the jackasses who go around saying that health and happiness are everything and money isn't essential. Because as soon as they have to borrow some unimportant money to maintain their health and happiness, they starve to death, so they can't go around anymore sneering at good old money, which is nothing short of providential.
Myself, I'm an avid Ogden Nash fan, and if I could ever write poetry, that would be the kind I'd like to write. How long has this album been out, the Ogden Nash album?
About a year and a half.
That's one of your earlier ones, then, isn't it?
Well, sort of our middle period. Let's
your
put
middle
it that
period.
Way.
What are some of the newer ones in lighter veins for listeners maybe who are looking for essentially light poetry?
We've had possibly about three records which you could call in lighter vein. Part of our hearing poetry record is fairly light. That is, parts of Dryden, which he speaks of Nell Gwynn in character. And then another record completely in character is one of our newest, Alfred Drake reading the Rubaiyat, which we mentioned before.
There's a question I'd like to put to you, if you don't mind. What about that beard of Drake's?
We refer you to the back of the record jacket of this lovely record, which, if it's in the record stores already, must be still practically wet from the printer. And there you will see a photograph of Mr. Alfred Drake in front of the microphone with his beard. It's real.
A real beard?
It doesn't come off. We tried.
I think, as a matter of fact, he was interviewed for some newspaper. And he did say that he grew the beard because he was afraid that the stage beard would come off somewhere in his gallivanting about.
I would think it could very well come off because he gives such an active performance. It's not only a singing and an acting performance, but it's very athletic, too, the way he does it.
Well, that's Mr. Drake.
And a great deal went into this record, too. It's not only the Judith Andersons who do unique preparations before a recording. Drake was just as conscientious, and it even went to the point to which he started questioning pronunciation. Well, I don't think most people who read the Rubaiyat particularly think about pronunciation, but I found myself the day of the recording over at the Iranian delegation to the United Nations having a private lesson on Persian pronunciation, which I then faithfully brought back to Mr. Drake, and he was able to proceed with the record.
So we're going to hear authentic pronunciations when we listen to these recordings by Alfred Drake.
Yes, and also one of the most charming episodes of the Rubaiyat, I think, the part in which he compares the plan of the universe to the potter's work and the reaction of the pots to the potter's handiwork. In other words, creation and the role of the created and of the creator. It's serious, it's perhaps profound, but it's witty, and this is the way Drake reads it.
I think the vessel that with fugitive articulation answered once did live and drink. And ah, the passive lip I kissed, how many kisses might it take and give? For I remember stopping by the way to watch a potter thumping his wet clay. And with its all obliterated tongue it murmured, "Gently, brother, gently pray." And has not such a story from of old down man's successive generations rolled of such a cloud of saturated earth cast by the Maker into human mold? And not a drop that from our cups we throw for earth to drink of, but may steal below to quench the fire of anguish in some eye there hidden far beneath and long ago. As then the tulip for her morning sup of heavenly vintage from the soil looks up, do you devoutly do the like, till heaven to earth invert you like an empty cup. Perplexed no more with human or divine, tomorrow's tangle to the winds resign, and lose your fingers in the tresses of the cypress slender minister of wine. And if the wine you drink, the lip you press, end in what all begins and end in, yes, think then you are today what yesterday you were. Tomorrow you shall not be less. So when the angel of the darker drink at last shall find you by the river brink, and, offering his cup, invite your soul forth to your lips to quaff, you shall not shrink. Why, if the soul can fling the dust aside and naked on the air of heaven ride, were it not a shame? Were it not a shame for him in this clay carcass crippled to abide? 'Tis but a tent where takes his one day's rest a sultan to the realm of death addressed. The sultan rises and the dark farash strikes and prepares it for another guest. And fear not, lest existence closing your account and mine should know the like no more. The eternal Sagi from that bowl has poured millions of bubbles like us and will pour. A moment's halt, a momentary taste of being from the well amid the waste, and lo, the phantom caravan has reached the nothing it set out from. Oh, make haste. Waste not your hour, nor in the vain pursuit of this and that endeavor and dispute. Better be jocund with the fruitful grape than sadden after none or bitter fruit. For is and is not, though with rule and line and up and down by logic I define, of all that one should care to fathom, I was never deep in anything but wine. Ah, but my computations, people say, reduced the year to better reckoning. Nay, 'twas only striking from the calendar unborn tomorrow and dead yesterday. And lately, by the tavern door agape, came shining through the dusk an angel shape bearing a vessel on his shoulder, and he bid me taste of it, and 'twas the grape. The grape that can with logic absolute the 72 jarring sects confute. The sovereign alchemist that in a trice lights leaden metal into gold transmute. The mighty Mahmud, Allah-breathing lord, that all the misbelieving and black horde of fears and sorrows that infest the soul scatters before him with his whirlwind sword. Why, be this juice the growth of God? Who dare blaspheme the twisted tendril as a snare? A blessing, we should use it, should we not? And if a curse, why then, who set it there? Oh, threats of hell and hopes of paradise. One thing at least is certain, this life flies. One thing is certain and the rest is lies. The flower that once has blown forever dies. Strange, is it not, that of the myriads who before us passed the door of darkness through, not one returns to tell us of the road which to discover we must travel to? The revelations of devout and learned who rose before us and as prophets burned are all but stories which awoke from sleep they told their comrades and to sleep returned. I sent my soul through the invisible, some letter of that afterlife to spell. And by my soul returned to me and answered, I myself am heaven and hell.
That beautiful reading by Alfred Drake of the Rubaiyat should certainly be one of your best-selling records in the very immediate future. But you don't record only poetry, I happen to know, as do our listeners. We've played William Faulkner on Anthology, reading his acceptance of the Nobel Prize. This was on Cadman Records, and what else do you have that isn't poetry?
Well, of course, there are the other selections on the Faulkner record. There is a long section from As I Lay Dying and from A Fable and from The Old Man. Then, in the way of prose, we've done Sean O'Casey. We've done sections of Tennessee Williams' A Glass Menagerie and his short story, The Yellow Bird. We've done, of course, Dylan Thomas's A Child's Christmas in Wales. Sometimes, you see, we combine both poetry and prose on a record. And since we have been speaking about our newest releases, I must put in a plug for our very latest one, which is Basil Rathbone's reading of two tales and several poems of Edgar Allan Poe's. I think we have just about enough time left for that very lyrical and lilting poem, Annabel Lee, which I don't think could be read any better than Mr. Rathbone does.
It was many and many a year ago, in a kingdom by the sea, that a maiden there lived whom you may know by the name of Annabel Lee. And this maiden she lived with no other thought than to love and be loved by me. I was a child and she was a child in this kingdom by the sea. But we loved with a love that was more than love, I and my Annabelle. With a love that the winged seraphs of heaven coveted her and me. And this was the reason that long ago in this kingdom by the sea, a wind blew out of a cloud, chilling my beautiful Annabelle. So that our high-born kinsman came and bore her away from me, to shut her up in a sepulchre in this kingdom by the sea. The angels, not half so happy in heaven, went envying her and me. Yes, that was the reason, as all men know in this kingdom by the sea, that the wind came out of the cloud by night, chilling and killing my Annabelle. But our love, it was stronger by far than the love of those who were older than we, of many far wiser than we. And neither the angels in heaven above, nor the demons down under the sea, can ever dissever my soul from the soul of the beautiful Annabelle. For the moon never beams without bringing me dreams of the beautiful Annabelle. And the stars never rise, but I feel the bright eyes of the beautiful Annabelle. And so all the night tide, I lie down by the side of my darling, my life and my bride. In the sepulchre there by the sea, in her tomb by the sounding sea.
And so, Anthology, number 36, dated Sunday, November 7th, 1954. Next week, our guests will be Peter John Stevens, author, poet, connoisseur of Welsh literature and poetry, and Richard Davis, who will read some of the classic Welsh poetry in Welsh. By transcription, Dylan Thomas reading from his own works. Anthology is brought to you by WRCA in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in New York. John Malcolm Brennan, director. The program is produced by Steve White. Written and directed for WRCA by Draper Lewis. Until next Sunday at 1:30, this is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good reading.